Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media to just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump on your bike, let's hit.
Hey, 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 amigo. How are we doing tonight, Philip? How you feel?
Good. How are you feeling?
Let me stop doing fine myself. Thank you for asking. Say hello to everybody out there. Before we start the show off, I want to set
First of all, people have been asking where we're at.
Yeah, that's a good question. We're up there in hyperspace somewhere in there. Who knows?
Coming to you live from the...
We got it live now, though. Transmission, everything is good.
Yep.
You know, before we get started tonight, I want a special send a shout-out, if you would, to the Iron Crossman out of Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada. A couple weeks ago, 3 weeks, example, I was down in Arizona for a bike run, and there was a human prison run. And Saturday night, midnight, four of the Iron Crossmen, one of their old ladies, was struck by a girl that turned left in front of them. Took all four bikes out. The president had both his legs broken, compound fractures, bone through the skin, back was broken. So I heard two Iron Crossmen were life-flighted, and the rest of them were all taken in the ambulance. Last weekend, a friend of mine went over to Las Vegas for a party, and at the Iron Crossman clubhouse, they said that the president, Ed, had just opened his eyes up and he was conscious again. So that'll be, it's a good sign. We want to say congratulations for that.
I saw the pictures of that.
Good deal. And Ed, we want to tell everybody and all the Iron Crossmen that we'll be out in Las Vegas. Is it September, October?
September.
Whichever one of the time. We'll be out there, and we've been invited to a big party with the Iron Crossman. I understand that they're hoping Ed and all the people that were in the accidents will all be at the party in September, October, whenever it is. Las Vegas Bike Fest. So, I want to say again to all the Iron Crossmen, our prayers have been with you, as many, many people have been praying for you. We're glad everything's working out okay. So, you people in Las Vegas, you got a damn good club out there. They take good care of us. So, anyway, on a positive note and all that, how are you feeling today, Philip?
Good. I got a...
Weather is fine.
Yeah. 58 and sunny right now.
I know.
Or actually, excuse me, 68 and sunny.
I was going to say, well, yeah, okay. I have a light jacket on, but no big deal tonight.
Well, I got this video filmed. It's by Reagan.
Hey, Ronnie Reagan?
Ronnie Reagan.
Hey, I like that boy.
Is this video... is not made for profit, nor is it commercializing on any contents or media used within. Okay?
Yeah.
Inspired, America never surrender. We stand behind this. We will not follow tyranny. We will not give our freedoms of religion or constitutional values. Please share this video on your walls and spread the word of truth. Okay?
I think Ronnie was stand-up. I don't care what people say about him. I like the guy.
Here we go.
Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, and this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we are retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rather than death, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know, and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material contributions. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn they're spirits, not animals. We said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
You're former military, I'm former military. We may not have been the greatest soldiers in the world, but I know you serve with pride, I serve with pride. I was too keen on washing dishes and guard duty, but the fact is, when I felt I had an obligation to this country, I was stood right there. I fulfilled my obligation, as you did, as many other brave men and women have done. I fear we have lacked the quality of a president like Ronnie Reagan's. Everything has been to a point where appeasement. I did some research just last week. This kind of ties in a little bit. After the Gulf War and after all these wars we were in, did you ever hear of a peace treaty?
No.
Did you ever hear of an end to the declared war?
No.
Nothing. How the hell are we having wars? We're going over there. We beat the armies up and we just leave. We're not asking for anything. We're not asking for some contribution for the war effort. We're not signing any peace treaty. We're not claiming any land. Basically, we're going over there spending money and American lives. We're not even signing a treaty. There is no end to the war. There's no beginning to the war. I don't understand this. If anybody wants to come back and clarify that, I'd appreciate that. But I never found a simple peace treaty.
Well, you know, it's just like Drill Sergeant Joe B. Frick's, his rules for a gunfight.
Well, what's Joe B. Frick say?
He said, number one is, forget about knives, bats, and fists. Bring a gun. Preferably, bring at least 2 guns. Bring all your friends who have guns. Bring 4 times the ammunition you think you could ever need. Anything worth shooting is worth shooting twice. Ammunition is cheap. Life is expensive. You shoot inside, buckshot is your friend. A new wall is cheap. Funerals are expensive. Now, the only thing worse than a miss is a miss. If your shooting stance is good, you're probably not moving fast enough or using cover correctly. Move away from your attacker and go to cover. Distance is your friend. Bulletproof cover and diagonal or lateral movement are preferred. If you can choose what to bring to a gunfight, bring a semi-automatic or a full automatic long gun and a friend with a long gun. In 10 years, nobody will remember the details of caliber, stance, or tactics. You only remember who lives. If you're not shooting, you should be communicating, reloading, or running. Yell fire, why, fire, cops will come with the fire department. Sirens often scare off the bad guys. Or at least cause them to lose concentration and will. And who's going to summon help if you're if you yell intruder, Glock, or Winchester? Accuracy is relative. Most combat shooting standards will be more dependent on pucker factor than the inherent accuracy of the gun. Someday someone may kill you with your own gun, but they should have beat you to death with it because it is empty. Stretch the rules. Always win. The only unfair fight is when you lose. Have a plan. Have a backup plan. Be the first one, because the first one won't work. No battle plan ever survives 10 seconds past first contact with an enemy. Use cover or concealment as much as possible. But remember, sheetrock walls and the legs stop nothing but your pulse when bullets tear through them. Flank your adversary when possible. Protect yours. Don't drop your guard. Always tactical load and threat scan 360 degrees. Practice reloading one-handed and offhand shooting. That's how you live if you hit your good side. Watch their hands. Hands kill. Smiles, frowns, and other facial expressions don't. And God we trust. Everyone else, keep your hands where I can see them. Now, decide now to always be aggressive enough, quickly enough. The faster you finish the fight, the less shot you will get. Be polite. Be professional. But have a plan to kill everyone you meet if necessary, because they may want to kill you. Be courteous to everyone. Overly friendly to no one. Your number one option for personal security is a lifelong commitment to avoidance, deterrence, and de-escalation. Do not attend a gunfight with a handgun, the caliber of which does not start with anything smaller than a 4. Use a gun that works every time. All skill is vain when the angel blows the powder from the flintlock of your musket. At a practice session, throw your gun into the mud to make sure it still works. You can clean it later. Practice shooting in the dark with someone shouting at you, when out of breath, etc. Regardless of whether justified or not, you will feel sad about killing another human being. It is better to be sad than to be room temperature. The only thing you ever say afterwards is, he said he's going to kill me. I believed him. I'm sorry, officer, but I'm very upset now. I can't say anything more. Please speak to my attorney.
Please speak to my attorney. I like that. What's that man's name again?
Drill Sergeant Joe B. Fricks.
Drill Sergeant Joe B. Fricks. All right. I want to thank Drill Sergeant Joe B. Fricks for sending him to us. You know, we'll just touch that a little further here. We have Korea, and are we still at war with Korea? I know we're having truce talks, peace talks. So since Korea's over, and I don't know, we never signed, we're still at war with them. Vietnam, we have some truce talks. I don't know if we ever signed official end of the Vietnam War. Now we got all this stuff over here in the desert land. We're going to war, the battle's over, and we're just leaving. Folks, I'm a little confused about this. You go to war, and the enemy has to pay for the war. Why is it we Americans go to war? We have all this money up front, including human lives, and we leave that country with nothing. I'm not sure how that works exactly. And anybody that wants to call up and say, well, Bill's got a problem with the military, kiss my ass. That's not what I'm talking about, and you should know it. Just talking about hypothetically speaking, I didn't know why we have all these wars, but when they're over, we're not having any peace treaties. If you go to a dinner in a restaurant, you're done eating, you pay the owner. You thank the cook. Why are we going into foreign countries and tearing the whole country up and then leaving? Why aren't we bringing back gold and silver and paintings, whatever the hell value in that country? We spend X number of dollars to go and save their butts. We should take X number of dollars out. If you don't have gold, there is certainly fine arts, again, paintings, sculpture, stuff like that. If that don't work, we should take all the Rolls Royces and the Bentleys out of the country. I'm just trying to say, if we're going to go to war, I kind of want to get my money back. Now, different people have different opinions on that, but that's how I feel tonight. We're a little low in the pond here for a second here. All right, then. I haven't picked on China in a day or two. Maybe I'll talk about my friends in China. China, how are you? You make a lot of money off us in America. You put Americans out of work. Shutting down American factories. Making a lot of money with American CEOs of large corporations.
You know, I got to tell you, Bill, you know what we just watched?
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but go ahead. You describe. No, you describe it. I'll go back talking about China again. All right.
Describe that.
That's a bit too...
over the top.
Yeah. But you people that want to call up, and you people have emailed me saying, well, Bill's got a problem with China. I do not. I have a problem with the government. I have a problem with those American corporations doing business in communist China. When did we stop saying... Communist China. They still call themselves Communist China. Why, in an effort to make China more appealing, do we not use the word Communist China anymore? We say we don't say Communist Vietnam anymore.
No.
Well, I'm not going to talk too much more in China tonight because I'm actually pretty mellow. Pretty mellow.
Yeah. Well, Ryan said he's got some new shoots. Don't stop coming.
Oh, well, good for Ryan, yeah. We had a couple local bikers die over the weekend, Philip.
Yeah. There's kind of
American shooting. American Legion riders and a member of the Booze Fighters. Both of them passed away this weekend. That's sad. In the same vein, last weekend there was a funeral for two Hell's Angels in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had some people pass away recently.
Kind of ironic. One guy's in the hospital, the other guy gets...
He was driving to the hospital to check on him, and he got in an accident. So. Goes back to, but your day, it's your day. You know pretty much about bouncing off a freeway, don't you, Philip?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, not fun at 80 miles an hour.
Yeah. Well, we got a caller on the line there. I can't see that. 708-539. Caller, you're out there? Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, if you would.
Hi, Phil. Hi, Bill. It's Nora from Chicago.
Hey, sweetheart. How are we doing?
Oh, not too bad. How are you? Sorry I was a little late. I had lasagna and stuff before I got on the show. Sorry.
You know, the last customer in my shop, Kennedy's Custom Cycles, was a Hell's henchman. He left Chicago in 1995, came out to California. We were just talking about Chicago and the old days and all that. I said, do you want to get a ride back? He goes, no, I'm too thin-skinned now, but I can't take that cold weather anymore. So.
Yeah, they were big here in the 90s.
Yep. He stayed until 95, then took a ride out to California to find the... He came to California... to find the California women, rode out one of his club brothers, and he said a true story. They went down to the beach, and they saw the two girls walking, and they started, you know, engaging in conversation, and they were talking,
right.
And I swear to God, the two girls were visiting. Do you want to guess where they're visiting from?
Chicago.
Chicago. He said, God, Phil, I come all the way to California. Why do I meet more Chicago women? Stay anyway like that.
That's funny.
Yeah, he's a big old boy. He's a healthy animal. So whatever they did, they fed him well there in Chicago. So
you have to understand, there's a lot of good places to eat here.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I mentioned last time I was out there, my friends, every night they take me to a different restaurant. It's kind of fun with that. Anyway, I know, Wally, I know you're not listening, because if you are listening, I know you won't call in. But we're glad you stayed in California. I'm sure the people in Chicago miss you, but we're glad you stayed out here. So,
You heard about this guy that freed those women that were captive.
Right? I did. That was pretty class act.
I think this guy is...
That guy was a class act. We all know what we're talking about here.
Yeah, this guy's the 2013 edition of Joe the Plumber.
Charles Ramsey.
Yeah, but are you aware that even though he was a convicted felon, he did have some domestic on him, but he did a wonderful thing. And
he did.
The money that they were going to give him, he turned it back to the victims. How cool was that?
That's a class act.
Yeah. I didn't care that the man had a record, but he did the right thing.
Yeah. He did.
Within hours of becoming a national hero. This is
the
viral video.
We
hang on.
On CNN.
We'll let this guy talk right now.
So you moved in about a year ago.
Yeah.
You'd seen Ariel Castro around, right?
When I moved in, only because he was my neighbor.
Right.
You know what I mean?
What was he like?
Cool. He wasn't no freak of nature. He was like me and you, because he talked about the same thing you were talking about. Yeah. He talked about you, you know what I mean? You know, regular stuff, bro.
So yesterday, what happened?
You want to know this?
Well, I was going to tell it all. Around 3 o'clock, I was on my porch. And the mailman put his mail in my mail.
So I looked at him
and
was like,
I got to get Ariel's mail when he come home. A couple minutes later, he pulled up. He checked the mailbox, grabbed his mail before he went in the house. I said, Ariel, Here go your mail. And we just have the same conversation when I hand him the mail. He said, they can't get it right. Mm. I said, no, damn postal service. That's it. He left. I jumped on my bike, went to McDonald's, came back home. I'm in my house, but I'm in the living room, and I'm right by the front door, because I'm looking out the front door. And, man, this girl screamed like a car had hit a kid, which made me, you know, stop eating. You know, what the hell was that? You know, that. So when I got up, I saw this, my neighbor across the street. He run across the street, and I'm like, well, where are you going? There ain't nobody next door, because I just saw Harry Lee. And I know ain't nobody over there. I heard that girl scream and saw him run across the street. And I went outside and wondered what he was doing. And Amanda say, I'm stuck in here. Help get me out. So he either don't know English that well or panic. But he just looked at me and was like, he's a girl. And that's all he did. So here I come with my, you know, half eaten Big Mac. And I look and I say, well, what's up? And she's like, I've been trapped in here. And he won't let me out. It's me and my baby. I say, well, you ain't got to talk no more. Come on. And I'm trying to get the door open. They can't. Because he didn't torture chamber it some kind of way and lock it up, right? So I did what I had to do and kicked the bottom of the door, and she crawled out of it. She grabbed her baby and threw me off. All right, so fine. I got some girl and her kid.
And what did she look like? I mean, what was she wearing?
Jumpsuit. She had a white tank top on, rings on, mascara. You know, she was well groomed. She didn't like it. She didn't look like she was kidnapped. That's what I'm saying. That's what threw me off. When she was like, I'm in here trapped. I'm like, you don't look like kidnapped. So maybe you got a boyfriend problem. But I'm thinking, I know he lives here. And he's 50-something. You can't be the boyfriend problem. You know, he can't be him. Maybe you're dating his son.
And you've never seen her before.
Bro.
In the year that you've been there.
Bro. That, man, listen, never. That woman didn't come out the house. The only kids that came out the house were two little girls. They played in the backyard. He had two dogs. Where I live, naturally, is next door. My bedroom was upstairs. So when I could hear his kids playing, I know it's them. They do the same thing. Play in the backyard for a couple hours, go back in the house. Same thing every day. The neighborhood knows them as his grandchildren. So it's no big deal. He got his grandkids over all the time. I thought
Amanda Berry then what asked to call 911.
Mm-hmm. And I took her to Miles. Now I'm nervous as hell, so I'm fumbling with my phone. So I finally get it right. She can't wait, and I don't blame her. So what I do is tell her go across the street and use their phone. Now we both calling 911. Now she get through, and I get through. She deal with a moron. Me too.
He said there were. What do you mean a moron?
Idiot.
I heard the 911 call for her, and the woman kept being like,
why do you have that damn job?
The woman was like, oh, hang up and wait for the police.
Really? How about stay on, and I'll talk to me until they get there.
Right. So you called 911. How quickly did the police get there?
You know why they got there so fast? Because I said, moron. Because I said, hey, Amanda Berry is right in front of me right now. Yeah, what she got on? And I told her, white tank top, blue sweatpants, nice tennis shoes. Nice, you know, ponytail. What else? Oh, right. She's panicking, idiot. Put yourself in her shoes. I just said, Amanda Berry, that don't ring no damn bells, you being a cop and all.
Dude, but you, when you first saw her, and she said the name of... Amanda Berry, did it...
It didn't know. Because I bro, it's clueless. Because they haven't found that girl.
Right.
And I guess stop looking for that girl. We figured that girl met her demise.
Right.
So Berry didn't register with me until I was on the phone like, wait a minute, I thought this girl was dead.
What does it feel like to have been living next to this for a year?
See, that's why now I'm having trouble sleep. See, up until yesterday, the only thing that kept me from losing sleep was the lack of money.
Mm-hmm.
So now that that's going on, and I could have done this last year, not this hero stuff. You do the right thing.
Do you feel like a hero?
No, a lot of people.
No, bro. I'm a Christian and American, and I'm just like you. We bleed same blood. with our pants on the same way. It's just that we got to put that being a coward, and I don't want to get nobody's business, you got to put that away for a minute.
Because you know how it is. There's
a lot of people turn the other way.
And have some cojones.
Keep walking down the street. That's all it's about. It's about cojones on this planet.
Has the FBI said anything about a reward or anything? Because there was a reward for finding her.
I tell you what you do, give it to them. Because if folks been following this case just last night, and you've been following me just last night, you know I got a job anyway. Just wouldn't pick it up. Paychecks. What did that address say? Ain't that saying?
I don't have my glasses. I'm
borrowed. 2203 Seymour. Where were them girls living? Right next door to this paycheck. So, yeah, take that reward and give it to this. That little girl came out the house, and she was crying. And I'm looking at her, right? I was like, well, your mama trying to help you, girl. Shut up. I don't know, right? And she's like, I want my daddy. And I said, who's her daddy? She said, Ariel.
She said that?
Yeah. I said, well, how is that possible? Because you wouldn't, if you got kidnapped, oh, he was having sex with you? Oh, Jesus. That little girl is just, now we want to punch you.
You felt that?
Bro, this would be a different interview. I told you that. If we had known that, man, I'd be facing triple life.
And wink.
You know,
hey, check this.
Circumstances make interesting situations. Who knows what we would have done? I don't know.
Well, if you didn't hear his original bill, here you go. I hate this with the moment.
Thanks, Olivia.
But yeah, this guy, he's like the new Joe the Plumber for 2013.
You know, first of all, I think they made a tremendous sacrifice by saying, let the three girls divide the money up. He obviously is got a small job, barely making it. We know he's an ex-felon. He's got a couple strikes against him, but he's out there saying, you know what, I got a job, I'm doing okay. Let the three girls have the money, get on with their lives. That takes a lot.
Yeah. There's the original interview yesterday.
Uh-huh. Heard screaming. I meet my McDonald's. I come outside. I see this girl going nuts, trying to get out of her house. So I go on the porch. I go on the porch, and she says, help me get out. I've been in here a long time. So, you know, I figured it's a domestic violence dispute. So I open the door, and we can't get in that way because how the door is, it's so much that a body can't fit through, only your hand. So we kick the bottom, and she comes out with a little girl, and she says, call 911. My name is Amanda Berry.
Now, did you know who that was when she said that?
Well, she told me it didn't register. Until I got to call the 911, and I'm like, I'm calling the 911 for Amanda Berry. I thought this girl was dead. You know what I mean? And she got on the phone, and she said, yes, this is me. And the detective, Cook, right here, Detective Gregory Cook says, Charles, do you know who you rescued? See, the girl Amanda told the police, I ain't just the only one. It's some more girls up in that house. So they went up there, you know, 30, 40 deep, and when they came out, was just astonishing, because I thought they were going to come up with nothing, because we see this dude every day. I mean, every day.
How long have you lived here?
I've been here a year.
Okay.
You sure come up wrong?
Right.
I barbecue with the dude. We eat ribs and whatnot, and listen to salsa music. You sure come up wrong?
And you had no indication that there was anything
else? Bro, not a clue that girl was in that house, or anybody else was in there against their will, because how he he just comes out to his backyard, plays with the dogs, tinkering with his cars and motorcycles, goes back in the house. So he's somebody that you look away because he's not doing nothing but the average stuff. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nothing exciting about him. Well, until today.
What was the reaction on the girls' faces? I can't imagine to see the sunlight, to be around people.
I knew something was wrong when a little pretty white girl ran into a black man's arms. Something is wrong here.
Good night.
Thanks.
No.
Can't get any more honest than
no,
that, Bill.
No, no.
Can't touch that shit with a
thing. Did we ever find out how many, there's three women there.
Three women.
How about how many children? I haven't got the report on
thought,
that.
I thought four or five, I heard.
Four or five children, I don't know.
What'd you hear, Nora?
And her, they're hoping that they can find out what happened to the fourth one. So it's three women. And in regards to a child, I only heard one, but I don't know because I was like popping in and out of a room and all I heard was like a little girl. So I don't know how many
they
other children
might,
that there were.
They said he might be facing some murder charges for the home in-home abortion.
There was talk
well,
about perhaps
yeah.
he may have buried the bodies out there on the property. So that we dig
well,
that up.
No,
I really,
they,
really, really do not want this man facing the gas chamber. I do not want that. I want this man to have a lifetime in prison because there's people in prison that really want to talk to this man.
Mm-hmm.
Bubba's waiting for him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's going to see the error of his way as soon as he gets right into jail. This is a sick... He and both his brothers, sick.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Anybody else want to comment on that or anybody out there? Anybody else out there tonight wants to comment on that?
Is there anybody else out there besides the three of us?
No, you
I'm here.
Oh, well,
oh,
say hello to us, dear.
This is Eunice. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Very sick man.
Yeah.
Very sick. Very, very sick.
What happened?
It's amazing. It's a miracle that those girls are still alive.
Yeah.
And the horror that they must have went through. The horror.
Well.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. They survived. They survived 10 years.
Yeah.
Well,
but,
in fact, I'm glad they're going back to their families because there's the base they need to get back on their head straight and all that. I'm hoping the family accepts these children without any remorse at all. I'm hoping these families open their arms up to the children, to the grandchildren.
I'm sure they will, Bill.
That's the only way these girls are going to get their head back on straight again is if everybody opens their arms up to them and if everybody says, you know, we're glad you're here. We
right.
love you. We love your children. What happened to you was not something you choose to happen. You were forced to do it. So that act itself is something we're going to just put aside. But the fact is you have a beautiful child from this sick bastard. Let's give this child the love it needs. Let's not have the child grow up with all kind of weird shit.
Well, just like
right.
the guy said, a reward, give it to them.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Well, I know that the one lady, she was threatened. That was the first woman, the one that came out, was able to get out first. It was told that when she gave birth, it was in like a pool type thing in the house and an underwater birth. And I know that they did stage on CNN that man told her that if the baby died, she would die.
Wow.
I couldn't
sick.
Believe it. It's like, what sick person. Well, we don't even want to go there. Because now there's a case that they're looking into in this state here in Illinois in regards to now that since that broke in Ohio, now bus companies here in Illinois are digging further in the backgrounds and finding out that, hey, you know, there are some of the drivers that have priors. And why are they driving a school bus of children? Makes you wonder.
Yeah, it certainly does.
I'm so glad I never took a bus. I always walked.
Earlier they mentioned the guy is working on his cars and his motorcycles. I wish he didn't mention the motorcycles. We get enough of bad raps. I'm not gonna say I don't really care what model it is. I'm sorry you mentioned motorcycles.
No, but he's not in the biker community. He's just a moron that is a wannabe. There's a difference.
Good point.
You know. But I will say this. That man will never see daylight.
Oh, again, I don't want him killed, though. I do not want him executed. I don't care how horrific.
No, I'm not meaning that. I just mean if they don't have the death penalty in Ohio, he will never see daylight, meaning he will not ever see outside of the walls, period.
Right.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, because there's people waiting right now in prison to show him the error of his ways, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, Bubba's going to be coming for me.
Can I tell you a wonderful story that happened Tuesday?
Sure. Yes.
Hermes and I and my daughter went into the Judiciary Committee Tuesday. And when we were standing outside, there was a few of the survivors come over and gave me a hug and, you know, the whole nine yards. And then there was a lot of testimony. And then this fellow, David, got up and he testified how when he was being sexually abused, he was on the beach. And he dug his hands into the sand when this was taking place. And he grabbed onto a pedal that he found in the sand, and he held onto it. It was probably the size of a half a dollar. And over the years, he has carried this, and every time he's had a problem in that, he would rub it in his hands, you know, over the years. So after we were testifying that, and I love Hermes, you know, and when he ever heard this story, David come over to me and he gave me a big hug and he says, you know, Ma, he says, you are the mother of our survivors. And I says, oh, David, just your love is enough, you know. And he says, no, he says, I have something for you. And I says, and what's that, David? And he took his hand out and he took this little tiny pebble. And it's no more bigger than a half a dime.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I want you to have this, Ma. He says, because you taught me I don't need it anymore.
Well, cool.
You know.
It must have been somebody, a real release. Let go of that. It must have been, outstanding.
I mean, you know, Bill and Phil, they could have said, here's $1 million, and it would have never, ever had it affected me the way that did.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, so you're going to live now, right, Dave? And he says, yes, I am. You know, and it's stories like that when you sit back and you say, and you get discouraged and you say, you know, what am I doing this for, you know? But if it's one person that you do it for, it's well worth doing whatever you've done in your lifetime. There's not too many things that touch my heart, but that really did. You know, even Hermes, I mean, he just was blown away by that, you know?
Yeah. You know, I have a very young friend of mine, a girl who pretty much every guy she ever hooked up in her life was a loser. Everybody abused her. It was just her self-confidence was going to shit. A while back, she met a nice guy, finally. These two are living together now. They came by my shop, and because I've known the girl for so many years, for me to see this transformation, this young couple, and they're both very, very, very young, under 25, them to find each other finally and start their lives. I'm telling you, I felt really impressed with that. Because I felt the girl's pain, drugs, she went through the alcohol, she went through the abusive, you know, wrong guys. I've heard her come in the shop just recently and say, this is so-and-so and yada, yada, yada. And I followed through on them. I really think this is going to be a happy story, so I can appreciate what you're saying. I don't get enough happy stories in my life. So many of my stories about negative. So it is good to hear a happy story about what you're talking about and to share my little happy story with this couple.
Yeah.
I won't say the names or anything, all that crap, but they know who they are. I'm sure they're listening in there.
Yeah, but it's amazing, right. You know.
That's,
I've really got discouraged many, many times, now he and I called him the next day, and I told him, I says, David, you don't know what you did for me yesterday. And he said to me, I did nothing. I says, yes, you did. Because no matter how hard I fought, and when I got up and I was going to make testimony, I was so irritated because they let all these fucking representatives and senators and chief of police and all these other people that we begged for years to help us get up and testify, you know, before any of the survivors. And a lot of them had to leave because they had to catch a train or a bus or something to get back to Vermont and New Hampshire. And they come in from all over the place. And I was furious. I mean, I was so furious. And it was like 10 past 5 before, you know, I didn't care if I testified to anything at that point, you know, but it was like 10 past 5. And I was just, you don't know how angry I was. But that by him doing that after I testified just made it worth me doing it for 12 years, you know. I mean, I've done it for 33 years, Bill, but I'm just saying, for 12 years of going there, you know. But, and I said to him, it was well worth just going there to get that. So
sometimes we do things and we just don't get the results that we want. So we keep plugging away and plugging away, that when we do find a happy ending, that really makes a big difference.
Oh, it does.
I am not always successful in the endeavors that we try to accomplish because the city's holding us back or this is holding us back, but we keep plugging away. And when we do, like yourself, when we do accomplish something, you know, it's like Philip and I charging our batteries back up again. Sometimes we get a little bit low because we get tired.
Yeah.
There aren't enough people out there doing what they should be doing. So Philip and I feel we're getting tired, but when we win, it's like, man, we're ready to pick up and start over again, and we keep doing that over and over in our life. So we understand what you're saying, girl.
Well, you know something? It is going to pass. Because if it wasn't going to pass, these assholes would not be up there testifying. They had one lawyer get up there and testify that that they shouldn't change the statute of limitations on the pedophiles because we were going to ruin their rights. I looked at this man, who's a lawyer, and I turned around and I said to him, I know who your God is.
Yeah.
And he says, what? I says, I know who your God is. Your God is your money. Any person that can stand up there in front of a bunch of survivors and say that he's there to protect the pedophiles. Thank God I didn't have a gun with me because I think I would have shot him. I don't think I would have shot him. I would have shot him.
Mm.
To have the balls to get up there and say something like that. And this is an attorney. You know? I come out
people
of there,
should be very, very, very afraid of people with conviction. If Philip and I believe we're doing the right thing, we're unstoppable. It may take us a while to get what we want, but we will not give in. Everybody out there who believes that they are right, I know for a fact that they will win. And those of us, that once we believe we're right, you can't stop us. You can only slow us down. You can throw paperwork in our face. You can delay it. Once we believe we're right, though, it's like a snowball going downhill. You can't stop us. Just going to take time.
It will pass this time. And I've said it before, I don't care what the convictions are, why it's going to pass. And we know it's election year here, and these assholes we pleaded with for years to get on the bandwagon. And now that they know it's going to pass, they're getting on a bandwagon, you know. But as long as it passes.
Yeah.
As long as we can protect our children. And that's what it's all about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about.
We do have a problem with some of our prisons where we've got people that have been wrongly convicted of charges. And I'm hoping that nobody has got a pedophile handle on him if they've not done it. I don't know. I just hope that everybody that does it is guilty and they get what's the rightful punishment for them. Sometimes every now and then I just worry that there are people out there who's being falsely accused. And we know there's people being falsely accused are in prison. We hear that every single day somebody gets out of prison. So that pedophile, you know, label, I just hope that we do get the right people, I guess.
Well,
as far as my being, am I being friendly or am I being saying, I'm not for any of them. I'd send you hang every one of them. The guy that wrote that kidnapped those girls, I want him in prison just so he can suffer. But the rest of these people, kill them all. Just kill them all. Prisons are too damn expensive anyway. Cost too much for food, clothing, and all that. If they say they're guilty, that's good enough to me. Give them the needle, put them to sleep, get them out. So, and let's not bury them. Let's just cremate them. Let's just get it over cheap, you know? All right.
Well,
sorry,
you know what infuriates me? In 12 years, if they had passed this bill when they should have, you know how many thousands of children we would have saved?
Yeah.
Thousands.
Well,
you know, that,
have you guys... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You know, that's the sad part, because nobody up on that hill wanted to protect these children. They wanted the money. They wanted, you know, to increase their money for their campaigns, you know. I mean... I said it before, and I'll say it again. We need a good enema.
Yep.
You know, we need goddamn good enema in this country.
Yeah.
We need an awakening and a good awakening. You know, the Speaker of the House, Hermes, will tell you, we went to supper after this. I says, Hermes, let's just go get something to eat here in Boston, and then we'll get on the road. We left like 7 o'clock in the morning. And we didn't get to Boston until after 9:30. You know, the traffic was horrendous going in. And as I'm walking into the restaurant, who's sitting there but the Speaker of the House of Representatives. And he goes, hey, Eunice. And I said, oh, hi, how are you? He says, oh, pretty good, you know. He says, how'd you do on the Hill today? And I says, well, you know, it would have been passed last year if you didn't change, you know, the windows. And he says, we never changed anything. We passed that. I says, no, you passed it to your liking, not to my liking or anybody else's, but to your liking. I never did this. Screw this. I won't do nothing anymore. I says, that's okay. We don't need you to do anything. You know, people say to me, how can you talk to somebody like that? Well, who the fuck is he?
Exactly.
Because he's the Speaker of the House? That doesn't fucking impress me. One bit. Not one bit does that impress me.
See, Philip and I have a wonderful advantage over most of the people. Philip and I are not running for any office at all.
Now,
I don't
have
to somebody's ass. I'm here to ask you, my representative, pertinent questions. I expect you to tell me the truth. Oh, what a concept that is. Tell me the truth. No, they want to give us whitewash bullshit. We will keep asking pertinent questions to these people who we elected, these responsible officials, until they start telling us the truth. I have questions. Philip has questions. You have questions. Why aren't these people giving us the answers we want to hear? Not make up bullshit. Just tell us what we need to get done here. I've got a lot of politicians. It's not that I don't respect them, because I know it's a tough job, but I don't want to hear no, this is the question. Give me the answer. So what's so difficult about that? I don't understand.
And yet I'll tell you one thing. We had a new chair. It's a chairwoman. And she's got a position in the Senate, okay? O'Flaherty was there, but he was the assistant chairperson. And she just let these people, first she says everybody will have 3 minutes. Well, when these politicians got up there, it wasn't 3 minutes. It was as long as they wanted to take. So when I got up there, I said 3 times 12. And she looked at me. I says, I want 3 times 12, which is 36 minutes, you know. I've been coming here for 2 years. And it's just amazing that they just look at you. And several of them were sitting there shaking their head, yes, yes, Eunice, yes, this is what it's about. And when we were getting ready to leave to get into our car, and I had the best parking space premises, I don't know who the fuck you know, but we only had to walk about 50 feet to get in there, you know? So when we were getting into the car, one of the senators come by that sat on the panel, and he goes, can I talk to you, Eunice? And I said, sure. He says, let me tell you something. He says, you were more powerful than all of them sitting up there. I says, I don't care how powerful I was. I just want to build past. That's all.
Right.
That's all I want is the bill passed. It's not about me and how powerful I was. It's about when somebody hands you something and thanks you. When you know this man doesn't have to walk around with this rock in his hand anymore, you know. Or when another one comes and says to me, you know, Eunice, I listened to you 3 years ago, and I realized that I have been sexually abused. And I listened to you today, and you're right, it wasn't God's fault. It was everybody else, the person that did it and the people that covered it, you know. So now I'm not afraid to walk into that church because I do love my God. You know, whoever God you want to pray to, you know. And those are the things that matter to me. Those are the things that matter to me.
No idea why the churches cannot be open for 24 hours a day. I spoke to a minister and I spoke to a priest and I spoke to a rabbi. They've all told me that, well, Bill, we have valuables in the churches, the temples, the congregation. We have valuables that people might steal them. My statement is, valuables out. Why can't you walk into a church in America at midnight, 2 o'clock in the morning, and say, I want to sit down, I want to kneel, I want to pray to my God?
That's right.
Every church, because they're constantly trying to collect money, they're trying to enhance it's worse. I don't want that. I don't think my God really cares who's got the most amount of money.
That's
right. I think that if midnight comes and I need to pray, I should walk into any church and have the doors open. If there's anything valuable in there and you're worried about getting it stolen, again, I tell everybody, take it out. Give the money to the poor. Do something. Why in America we cannot, again, have the right to go into a church and pray at night? I just can't figure that out at all, guys.
Well,
I can't either.
There was a story here in Chicago that actually took place. I thought it was in Chicago. It was actually in a suburb called Joliet. There was a priest, a Catholic priest, that was charged with pedophilia. Okay. So what did the archdiocese do in this town? They shipped this priest off to a place in Kentucky. kind of out of sight, out of mind, okay?
That'll do that.
And then they lost track of him. So now here's a priest out there, and they don't know where he is.
They've done many years.
Well, yeah, they know where he is. But are they going to say anything? No, they're not.
I'd like to point something out, and I don't know why I'm on the subject now, but I'm going to say that I am a strong Irish Catholic third-generation immigrant coming to this great country, and I have no idea why the Catholic Church treats the nuns the way they treat them. And I have no idea why women want to join an organization where you have to swear an oath of obedience to a priest, why they cannot be a participant in the Mass, why they cannot run the churches. They have to be obedient to what the men say. Ladies, at some point in time, I'm going to say this right now, wake up.
Yeah.
What are you waiting for, ladies? You belong to a church, you can't be a priest, you can't get up and give a Mass, you can't have any rights, you have to constantly kowtow to the priest.
Where does it say, because I'm Catholic, so where does it say that a woman cannot do this?
About the 3rd century, they said that, no. Because in the beginning, they did have some great speakers. I mean, They had some prophets, apostles, and there were strong women in the beginning. Now, I think it was around the 3rd century that they said that's got to stop. Got to stop altogether. They put women out. And
so what were they scared of?
The fact that Lord Jesus accepted women as an equal. And the priest, not the priest. Let me stop saying the priest. The men who run the church.
Okay.
See, every time you have an organization, you have men. Every time you have men, you have weakness, you have illness, you have ego and attitude. I don't have a problem, my God, but every major organization, every institution, Catholic, Protestant, Baptist, Mormons, every organization is run by mankind. There's the weaknesses right there. But how long will it be ever in my lifetime where the women say, hey, you either give us equal rights or else we're going to stop being part of the church? I wonder if that would happen. Anybody think about that?
I think so. I really do think so.
I don't think so. To be honest, I don't think so.
No?
No.
Well, I don't know, Nara.
You have to understand, where I grew up, okay, across the street from the house I grew up in was a very strong Irish Catholic family, okay? There were several siblings. It was a big family. And the oldest daughter went in to become a nun. But she became a nun that went to poverty-stricken countries to help where she could. Not so much in the church, per se, okay, but to help in third world countries, okay. And that was, like, in 1972. They still didn't have a foot to go on then. So what makes you think, out of how many decades or whatever, are women going to be able to have that chance?
Because the woman has to take that choice herself, Nala.
I don't know if they will.
I think a lot of them will.
I think for some reason women can let the men rule. We could use some more leadership in the churches. Let's talk just briefly. Oh, my God. Let me go back in time a little bit here. A Lady of Fatima, the Blessed Virgin, appeared to the children there. And she said, I'm going to give you 3 messages. Tell it to the Pope. Tell these messages to the people of the world. The Pope gave the first message. He gave the second message. He decided the third message is not appropriate at this time. We still don't know what the third message from the Holy Mary Mother, Mother of God, sent a message down to the earth. And the Pope says, well, I don't think it's quite appropriate to give that message out. Buddy, who are you? If God's mother gives us a message, you better just give us a damn message. But they say it's not ready. It's not appropriate. I want to say quickly, my mother and father moved into Carlsbad, California, 1963. My mother bought she bought the house right across the street from Shirley Temple. Literally from one stone to another, I could throw and hit Shirley Temple's house. beautiful home, beautiful driveway roundabout and all that. Shirley Temple was getting into politics, then she became Shirley Temple Black, but she donated that home, her beautiful mansion. And by the way, my mother's house was not a mansion. It was just a kid house. But right across, she gave this beautiful home to the nuns for a retirement home, a place that nuns will always have a place to go. As soon as she did that, and the nuns moved in, my church, Catholic Church, said to the nuns, we need you to move out. We want that land to build another church. Shirley Temple Black now, she gave the land to the nuns. She gave her home for a retirement home. But because the nuns swore oath of obedience, the priest said, the church says, we want you to go somewhere else, and we want your land. And what could they do? They had to give it up. Now, I'm not real happy that right across my driveway is a giant Catholic church. And I say that because if you ever try to get into your own house during church services, you know they park on the street. They park in your driveway. I sometimes have to just wait the services are over to go visit my mother. But that's another example of saying where nuns that were giving this home for retirement were told by the church, give it up, we want that property, and they demolished Shirley Temple's home and built a beautiful church. It's a good idea for the church, I think, but that's not what the property was for. No. But women, and I don't understand, I'm talking to very strong women right now. Why women in the religions, let's talk about the Mormons. I don't see no women run the Mormon church, do you, Philip?
No.
I don't see no matter what religion we're talking about. I don't know why you, I'm waiting for one day you women to say enough is enough. How can I be a better Christian because I'm a man than you being a woman? Are you less of a Christian because you're a woman, you're not allowed to get involved in the church activities? I'm finding a hard time to believe that, guys. I don't know what's going to do when we have got bishops. Go ahead, anybody, jump in.
And I'm not changing subject, but you heard what happened in Worcester this past week, right?
No.
That we had the bomber.
Oh, yeah, yes, of course.
The marathon, we
yes,
had
sorry.
Him in Worcester. Now he's buried. Secondly, our bishop in Worcester.
A man.
He got arrested for drunken driving and leaving the scene of an accident. And thirdly, they found a man that had a dungeon in his basement in Worcester with a small child's coffin, and he's a pedophile.
Okay?
That's
coffin. And I mean, this is right here in Worcester, you know? Well, even Hermesy, the lawyer sent me an email. This is your friend, meaning the bishop, you know? And I said to them, listen, he's as human as us, we've all. And anybody that can sit here and throw a stone at another person, you know, I just don't understand people, Bill. The older I get, the worse I get.
It's hard for us at times. We try not to be judgmental. Like I said, I'm kind of knocking the churches right now, but I'm not really talking to churches as an institution. I mean, it's a wonderful organization. I just don't understand how in this day, in this month, in this year, we still have to say women will be treated as second-class citizens. Now, a priest goes out, he gets drunk, he leaves the scene of the accident. Okay, that's just stupidity. Anybody involved with children, especially a priest, whatever church you belong to, you have a source of authority. People trust you. You abuse that authority. I hope there's a special place in hell for you. I hope that more than anything else there is. Again, you get drunk, you have an accident, okay, that was just dumb. But what Philip and I feel about children, it's sacred. Children need to be loved. And we find these sickos, like I said, I just hope they make it to the, hope they make it to the jails, because there's special people named Bubba waiting to talk to those people. Right, Philip?
Oh, yeah. And see, this bill here is also, it's two bills. It's the statute of limitations.
Uh-huh.
You know, now we've got it up to 55 years, which is a wonderful thing, you know. The second is the sentencing bill for these pedophiles. There's no more first time and we're going to slap you on the hand type thing. And no matter if you're a priest, no matter if you're a priest, a minister, a rabbi, or whoever it is, your picture's going up on that wall too.
Yeah.
And that's what this bill is all about. You know. But
everybody has a right to their day in court. Again, I would never want somebody to be a false label. But I'm telling you, we gotta treat these people with much more strict rules. And as far as you're saying 55 years, I'd say make it a lifetime. Make it a millennium. Make it whatever the hell you want. The rest of the mankind, you're liable. 5 years, 10 years, that's 55 years. No, as long as there's a God, as long as there's sunshine, you've done something, we find out about it, you're in deep shit. There's no statute of limitations in my mind. In fact, if I find somebody that does a statute of limitation and they get off, you know, I don't want to say this over the air, but I said, you better hope that they find you and not Philip and I. There is no statute of limitations to people that abuse children in our mind here.
No.
I mean, if you heard some of those stories, and I've heard them for years, I mean, years, and I just told the whole Judiciary Committee, I'm taking this problem because I want to sleep tonight.
That's right, for all of us.
Right over to you.
You're using your mouth, but you're speaking for all of us.
You know?
Yeah.
So I hope you can sleep tonight.
True. Right.
Because I'm tired of the horror stories.
You're
going to
start for a second. We've
got
to call in about some information, so I've got to put you, hold that thought for a second, because I need to pull in 579. Go to us, tell us who you are, where you're calling from, and what you want to talk about.
Yeah, am I on, Bill?
You're on, buddy. Talk to us. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Hey, I'm calling from San Diego, California.
Okay, and what's your name?
I'm Southbound, dude.
Oh, I know that, but people don't know anybody. What do you want to talk about tonight? I know that, too, but I want everybody to know about it. Tell us what you're talking about.
Hey, no, actually, I wanted to cue in on that conversation. I'm all over that pedophile thing. I mean, they shouldn't even have a life. You know, they should be castrated because that's just one thing that you just don't do. You know, that's the one thing that is disgusting. And no, I'm just ill. The whole concept even disgusts me out. And it's horrible because it affects the individual child or, you know, children in a way that it's just not a one-time incident or whatever. That affects them for life.
Well, what we're talking about is we're talking to the Eunice, and she's trying to put this bill together, and she's been fighting this for years.
Bill is together, builders.
No, and she's been fighting for years to get it, you know, something like that. This is one lady's commitment, not just one lady, a lot of people there, but one person's commitment, and she feels like we're using her voice, but she speaks for all of us. And I know from the way you just talked about it, she speaks for you, too, because these people they're sick. They're just sick.
Yes, they are. Very, very, they're mentally sick. You know, there is a screw loose in their head, and, you know, yeah, we should try to help them treat that, you know, like any addiction or whatever. But they should also be punished for the rest of their lives. Because there
you
is,
can't
even though you want something that bad,
Go ahead, jump in. Ask him a question, dear, please. Go ahead.
You can't cure pedophilia.
There you go.
No. These pedophiles blame the children. And say the children came on to them, 5, 6, 7 years old. Please, I've been doing this for 33 years. I had a child that was sexually abused, you know? And I promised my child, I promised him that no matter if it took me all my life, that it was going to be fixed.
Yeah. I think we're all on the same page here. I don't think we're disagreeing on anything.
No,
we're on the same page here. Everybody's together here.
It's just
you know, and it's more people. You know, it takes people. We put these people in. You know, we put our representatives and our senators and our congressmen and the whole nine yards in there, and we should be able to take them out. They should be speaking for our children.
That's right.
Not just in Massachusetts, all over the goddamn country, all over the world. People
just don't.
Philip and
I talked about that you go in and these representatives, they have to answer your questions. You got a question about what's going on with your city hall or your senate, your congressman, go in and talk to these people. Why do we think they don't want to listen to us? They have to listen to us. We elected them. They don't want to listen to us. Let's get them out. People bad-mouthing our president. Stop bad-mouthing our president. You don't like him? Vote for somebody else next time. Stop whining
and
making
him in there.
Get down there. Get down there and say, look, I got questions. I want answers. Go ahead, anybody, please.
You know, that's the hard part is, you know, like, people don't want to make the hard decisions. People don't want to talk about the hard subjects, and then we get the few individuals that stand up, you know, because you see these kinds of things all the time on social media. People stand up and ask the hard questions, say, why do you want to take away my guns? Why don't you want to put people who commit DUIs harder fines and penalties? Why don't you want to do this? Why don't you want to do this? And they don't want to answer those questions. Because they don't even want to have a personal opinion about it.
Nope.
Because if they have a personal opinion about it, they have to be held accountable for it.
That's right. Wow. That's why I would say, Philip and I are not politicians. You ask me a question, I'll tell you how I feel. You agree with me, you disagree with me. That's fine. But I'm not a politician. I don't have to say something on Tuesday and wonder on Thursday, gee, what did I say? I'm going to tell you the same damn thing because that's how I feel about it. I respect the politicians, but I respect the fact that Philip and I don't have the burden of trying to appease everybody. Because some people, we just can't appease it all, folks. That's how I feel.
You know something, Bill? In the 1960s, I remember Republicans and Democrats shaking hands and working together. We have not had that in this country for many years. It's the Republicans.
We've not had the leadership
that
we need in this country.
You know, and it's... And who are the ones that get in to be presidents? The ones with billions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's all about money. And we're going to lose this country.
Well, every single CEO of every corporation makes more money than the president.
You know?
So why are they becoming president? There's a lot of stuff that...
because they want to run it.
That's right.
And it's the insurance companies. The insurance companies are more powerful than anybody in this country.
Yeah.
They have their hand. You can't get a TV without buying an insurance policy for it. I mean, come on. You know? And we allow them to do this. We allow
you
them
buy
to
a bike
do
you
this.
Build, you buy
you know, I'm sitting there thinking, ouch, because I sell 1 and 2 year warranties. Buy a bike from Kennedy's Custom Cycles. I pride my names on it, but I say right away, buy a warranty. You know what's going to happen 1 or 2 years to your motorcycle? Buy a warranty. So you buy the motorcycle off me, and now you got to pay extra. That makes
I don't know. I think I'm getting too old too fast, Bill. Really.
Something I wanted to talk about for 1 second, just to deviate slightly, kind of ties in. Philip, what is going on in Australia? Can you share that with me?
Oh, well, if you have...
Oh, man, come on, boys and girls. Hang on to your seats. Hang on to your safety belts.
If you have tattoos, Bill, you have to register your tattoos now.
What?
This is a new thing in Australia.
Go ahead.
Identification purposes, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to have to say... not just a new tattoo, excuse me. We want you to come in... Every tattoo on your body, we want that to be registered so we can identify you in case you get lost, in case something happens to you, in case you commit a crime. The continent of
Australia. Good luck on that one.
Everybody must go in now and record their tattoos.
Well, why don't we all get tattoos on our asses?
I'm pulling it up right now.
And when they go to take a picture of it, blow the biggest... right in their face.
Now, you know, for a long time, Australia has been to me kind of like a, I don't know, kind of a rough country, you know, freedom and all that, but they've taken their guns away from them. They made them turn all their guns in. Everybody. Philip and I talked to all of our friends, and a lot of them over there have buried their guns rather than turn them in. But now, the government said any three or more people together that could be under RICO, Australia can pick you up for that now. But the newest
one
there is everybody in the country with a tattoo must be, the government must record it.
Okay, I'll tell you. Here's
all right, hang in, everybody.
Here we go. Tattoo registry rejected as an infringement on rights. Tattooists have rejected a proposal for a Queensland tattoo registry to discourage biking-related money laundering, with lawyers saying it would impede on privacy. The registry would force people wanting tattoos to register their intentions with the government in an attempt to stop biking-related tattoo parlors taking receipts for fake customers. Under the Health Act, there should be a register of people getting tattoos so we can identify those people getting tattoos. Rather than have John Smith, Bill Brown, and all other fake names of people who are paying $5,000 to $10,000 for tattoos. I'm going to learn how to do fucking tattoos.
Man, I'm telling you, you know what?
I can make $5,000 to $10,000
doing tattoos. I'm going to dump my Harley's to start
doing that. I start doing tattoos. This is a way for these bikie clubs to clean their money. But Australian Tattooist Guild spokesman Josh Rolick said the registry is a huge infringement on civil liberties and privacy.
The
majority of our clients would probably be reluctant to do that, and it's just a big infringement on civil liberties and privacy. The second concern we have is where the resources are coming from and who's going to pay for it all. Well, who's going... Let's see, where...
That'll most likely come out of your country's tax money right there if you have to create a whole bureau of just tattoo registration.
The concept of, again...
To have people...
It's for your own good, America. Australia, it's for your own good. Walk right down the police station right now and show us your tattoos. It's for your own good.
Yeah, I'll decide what's for my own good, just as I would expect any man, woman to decide what is their own good. Because
good
I live my
you.
Life the way I want to live it. You live your life the way you want to live it. If that conflicts in any way, obviously I'm not going to associate with you. That's how life works.
I'd like to point out a great statement by our great statesman Benjamin Franklin, who said, up where the tip of my nose starts. As long as you're not bothering me, I'm not going to bother you. You're going to touch my nose, you're getting too personal, and we're going to stop you right there. Benjamin Franklin said that way back in the day. He was telling people, he's telling government, back off. And we're still fighting it today. So if that goes through and they continue that in Australia, can you imagine what it would be like lined up outside the police station? Then what are they going to do? If you don't get it registered, they're going to do the tattoo police out there looking for you? Wouldn't that be something? Ladies,
yeah,
could you go in and get your tattoo registered?
Well, like I told you, Bill, mine's going right on my ass. And I'm 72, so. You know. And it's all wrinkled, so.
Well, you know, you didn't.
Yes,
I showed Bill your picture a little while ago.
Yes, good looking picture, girl.
Hey, you know, 72, not too bad.
Yeah.
I could only get rid of the wrinkles.
Hey,
listen, it's been a long road, a hard road, but I continue to fight, and that's the bottom line. And like I said, David made it very well worth for me.
Well, when you make the world just a little bit better, you're doing okay. Philip and I do not seek honor. We do not seek money. We have no corporate sponsorship backing us up here. I try not to aggravate too many politicians because I know they have a tough job. But when they're wrong, and we have to confront them. The same thing with police officers. I am not adversarial against police. But when a police officer abuses authority, you just got to confront them. At some point
right.
in time, you've just got to confront people. Everybody says, oh, I don't want to cause trouble. It's not causing trouble, boys and girls. It's your world and my world. You have to stand up and say something. What is that about? It's better to die on your knees than to...
No, it's better to die standing up than die on your knees.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you. I said it kind of backwards. You guys heard that saying, I'm sure, lots of times and all that, yeah. Better to die standing up than die on your knees. Thank you, yeah.
Well, when I'm ready to go, Phil, let me know.
Yeah.
You know, I got a hot monitor on now for 30 days, right?
Uh-huh.
This thing must be going off like a banjo back there at the hospital. It's got to be. It's got to. my heartbeat must be going, you know.
No, what it does is I'm a device that records itself, and then they play it when you turn it back in.
Well, no, I have to, every morning I have to call up this number and...
Oh, okay.
And,
yours
yeah,
is different.
You know, and then they find it out, but it's... I says, listen, this is
no,
it.
The one that I had to wear, it recorded it in the machine, and then when I brought it in, they went through it that way.
Yeah, that's how they did the same thing with mine, and that thing is very uncomfortable to wear.
Oh, tell me about it.
It's very uncomfortable. You got wires going everywhere. You're sticky with little pads, and you're trying to sleep. Just doesn't work with you.
Well, I just hope I don't rip it off, you know. They'll probably think I had a heart attack.
No, you just tell them that you saw that nice-looking doctor.
Oh, Jesus. He, Bill, did they tell you that story?
No.
So sick about, what was it, about three... No, it was actually, you know, I was so sick, I had this viral infection that it just brought me to my knees. It really did, you know. I mean, I couldn't walk. You know, I my whole body just, it just went through my whole system and my body started breaking down. So I had to go to this doctor. And if you could see me that day, Bill, no makeup on. The hair was straight. I had a sweater on because I was freezing, and it was just terrible. And this doctor walked in. Well, I'm telling you, this little twitcher started twitching. And I said, I just fell in love. The poor doctor looked at me. He says, what? I said, really, this thing hasn't started twitching in years. And it started twitching. He was so handsome and so sensitive to my needs. I mean, really sensitive to my needs. And I was so sick. Oh, I'm telling you, I'm going to get his picture and put it up.
I'm going to share this story with you then. I hope my wife's not listening tonight. You know, I was in the hospital and I was in that coma for a couple of weeks. The day after I came out of it, one of my friends brought this lady friend of his in with him to visit me. And when she, well, first of all, she wore an extremely low cut top, really, really short dress. And when she came over to say goodnight, goodbye, she kissed me on the cheek, and she rubbed her amply endowered upper torso over me. And when they were leaving, I was checking her out, and I'm thinking, man, if I'm checking this girl out, I'm not going to die. I'm going to get... At that point, I was pretty in pain. Blah, blah, blah. But when she started rubbing me a little bit, I'm thinking,
see, Bill?
She was just
see?
Trying to make you feel better.
I'm going to live.
Exactly. Oh, God.
My wife, she's right now. Todd Cheney, good friend of ours, for bringing that lovely girlfriend in. I'm sure he doesn't even know who that girl is today anymore, but he was nice enough to bring this lady down to the hospital to waken my morals or bring me back to life or whatever the hell.
Waken up your fantasies, still. That's what it was, you know.
Hey, 951. Listen, you got any motorcycle event coming up or anything?
Oh, yes, sir, I do. It's the whole reason I called in. I kind of got sidetracked because I'm really ADD. I'm sorry. I apologize. No, actually, my motorcycle club is called Doom Squad. We're a local club here in San Diego, North County. We're partnering with a company called Rev Moto Industries, and what we're doing is we're doing a full event. It's going to be about an eight-hour event to raise money for a Wounded Warrior Project. For the people who are listening, you know, that are on the East Coast, West Coast, aren't familiar with the military, aren't familiar with, you know, how we're close in the community, because we really are, especially among veterans, combat veterans. I myself am a combat veteran, so whenever I meet a veteran, there's a very long conversation that entails. But the Wounded Warrior Project, what its primary function is to help injured service men and women from the Navy, the Army, Air Force, and Marines. When they come back from what we refer to as in theater, which should be a combat theater, like Afghanistan, Iraq, all the other places we're at around the world, they help them adjust back to civilian life. And I really wish I would have had this when I got out. I got out in 2004, and I was in the initial wave. When I got out, basically, I got a little questionnaire, and they were all like, okay, have a nice day. You're free to get out of the Marine Corps. Now they run your whole system, you know, and this is one of them. And this company, it's not a company, it's a nonprofit foundation, and what they do is people who come back and say lost their leg in a roadside accident or a roadside bomb, they help do the physical therapy. They help buy the freaking prosthetic, you know what I mean? They help that individual. They come into their people's lives. They take that individual and their families in, you know, and help them readjust back to a semi, what would be considered normal life. And that's what they do. And there's, like I said, it's an entirely nonprofit, nonprofit foundation. It really hits home for me and my club because my club is comprised of all veterans. We have one guy who's prospecting who is on active duty. You know, and 90% of us have deployed. We are combat vets. So all of us who have gotten out and didn't have the chance to go through this or have this available for us, you know, it hits home for us. And we're raising money for them, and our goal is to raise $10,000, okay? And we're doing an event in Oceanside, California, and I pray that you guys would like to come out to this thing because it's going to be big. Excuse me. We're going to be shutting down a couple of streets. We're going to have a jumper out there, a beer garden. We're going to have three live bands. One of them is a local band called As You Were. We're going to have food vendors, games. We're doing like a longest basketball shot, longest football shot. We're having a photo booth out there. We're just doing it really big. We're gonna have raffle prizes that we're giving away, and all of this money that we're raising is going to Wounded Warriors. Like I said, it's Saturday, June 29th. It's between noon and 8 p.m., I believe. We're still figuring out the exact times, you know, but it's basically going to be that time in the afternoon. We've designed before this is a ride. So anyone who rides motorcycles, please come out for this. This is going to be really, really cool. We actually got a Hurst, and we're going to have a company, because obviously it's Mother's Day is right around the corner. We've talked to them, but we're going to wait till after Mother's Day. We're going to have a bouquet of roses styled in a purple heart that's going to go on the Hurst. And it's going to be what we're calling it is a Wounded Warriors ride. We're going to ride around Oceanside. It's about 25 miles. And then we're going to come back to RevMoto, which is located in Oceanside. And we're going to play taps. We're going to have a 21-gun salute. And that's going to kick off our event. So it's going to be really, really cool.
Day is this?
Go ahead.
What day is this?
It's Saturday, June 29th of this year.
Okay. You got a flyer together yet?
We're in the process of getting our flyers made right now. I've been trying to get a hold of the guy, and he's not returning my call, which has been a big problem. The reason I called in and chimed in so late is because I was dealing with stuff from that, too. It's just been very crazy, you know, getting closer and closer to the wire. We are currently looking for vendors, too. We've got a where's my paper right here?
We had 96,726 people look at my blog today.
Wow.
As soon as we get a there.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
see
we're looking
different
at it right now. We've got Leo Vince, which is an exhaust company. We've got Track Days coming out, Semper Ride, Back Alley Grill in San Marcos, great burger and beer joint. RevMoto, obviously. Wizard Bail Bonds, 905 Racing, Escondido Cycle Center, Need Damage Racing, and Oceanside Cycle Supply has come out. Trying to get a hold of like some of these bigger companies, you know, like Pepsi and Coke and GoPro and stuff like that, which we're actually going to be raffing off GoPros, tires. Like my club does it big. Everyone in, you know, all the in the motorcycle community up here knows that when you come to any of our events, we always give away high expensive items. Our last bike night we just did, we did $600 worth of merchandise that we raffled off. And guess what? We didn't even make half that back. You know, but it happened.
I heard,
you know,
at the last raffle you gave an interesting clock away. Was that
true?
Yes,
that clock was awesome. I wanted it so bad. it was a Harley Davidson intake, like the metal bracket that goes on the outside of the intake.
The air cleaner.
Got this from Bill, and it was made into a dial clock. And it was awesome. It was all chromed out. Beautiful freaking thing. It was really, really cool.
I said that not to get the credit for that. I said that because he wanted to get that. He's putting the run on, but he still did raffles and everything to try to get it. He couldn't get the clock. Sorry about that. But you know that. For
yep,
our people
yep,
and our friends and guests, say they can't pull into Oceanside. How can they maybe drop a dime or two, send a check out of something? You get any address on that?
Oh, I can give you an address for that, where I think we set up a PayPal account.
But that's what we want to hear.
Yeah, it's Oceanside. It's Oceanside Motofest at PayPal.com, or you can also email OceansideMotofest@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to, you know, you don't know, you're not really into the high tech world, you can also write a check or a cashier's check or whatever. And by the way, all of the proceeds we're getting is going into an account. We're going to get one of those big old checks, you know, the presentation checks, and we're going to give the money to Wounded Warriors. It is not coming into our pockets. You know, it's not going into the business's pockets. It's all going to Wounded Warriors to help our returning veterans and the what I like to call the younger generation. My younger Marines coming in who have come back and now they're hurt. You know, they can't adapt. And, they, you know, so if you wanted to mail something in, you can, let's see, where is it? You can ship all the materials and donations to, it's just write Oceanside Motor Festival at 180 Roymar Road. Roymar is R O Y M A R Road, Suite G, Oceanside, one word, California, 92058. And you could also give them a call and verify that at 760-622-5187. You might speak with a gentleman named Micah. Really good guy. He's the business end of it on his side, because I'm actually the treasurer for my club, so I'm handling all the business end on our side. So me and him are always in constant constant communication. So, yeah, just go ahead, and if you want to give them a call just to verify this, he can give you as much detail as I can, if not more. Because he just set up the PayPal account, and I just didn't.
Send the information to Philip, the flyer and all that. Most of the information will be on the flyer, because Philip, you said you could post that for him, correct?
Correct. As soon as I get one.
Can you
put
that PayPal in?
Yeah.
No, most of that stuff should be on there. I don't know if all the PayPal and stuff like that is on there, but.
Need that on there, brother.
Write it on the flyer.
Yeah, no, I'll handwrite it on there for you. But, I didn't design the flyer. That was, I think, my prez and one of my road captains that did that. So, you know, that was their deal. They did that. You know what I mean? Like, we've all been delegated little itty-bitty things that we need to do to make this a successful event. We're hoping to get at least 1,000 people there.
Did you identify the name of your club? I don't think you did, brother.
Oh, well, the name of my club is called Doom Squad MC. The word Doom is actually an acronym. It stands for Defining Our Own Mission, D-O-O-M. And that basically means for us that whatever we do it our way. We don't let any outside interference or someone says, you can't do that. Well, if we want to do it, we're going to go do it. And it's not in a bad way. My club is a 99% club. We are a family club. We're extremely family-oriented. You know, we've raised money from the Escondido school system. We've done it for the past 3 years. During Thanksgiving, we go and we feed the homeless. The past couple of Christmases, what we've done is we've sponsored families in need, families that can't buy children, you know, can't buy their children, you know, Christmas gifts. Guess what we did? We went out, like last year, I think we spent like $450 and sponsored like two families. Just in children's toys, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the first year we did our school drive.
You came to me, and you talked to me about what you're doing. Again, Kennedy's Custom Cycles, we're only about Harley-Davidsons. We welcome everybody to ride what they want. But this event is for all motorcycles. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is. All motorcyclists. My club is a mixed club. Some of us ride sport bikes. Some of us ride cruisers. I actually ride a cruiser and a sport bike. So I don't own a sport bike right now. I actually have a Road King, you know, but I started off on a sports bike. And, you know, we just look at it, it's all about the ride. You know, it's all about those two wheels, getting out there and feeling the freedom, and, you know, which is, you know, freedom, America, you know, hitting the road, you know. It's all about that. It's about the closeness that we have, you know what I mean, the camaraderie that we have between each other when we're on the road. And we feel that with other bikers, whether they're independent riders, motorcyclists from other clubs, we feel that from them, you know what I mean, and we respect that, and we, you know, we give respect, and you know, sometimes we don't get respected, but hey, that happens, you know. But we always give 100% respect. And
you would ask me about would we, my brothers and I, come down and put a booth up in there, show some of our Harley-Davidsons. And I said, yes, I'd be very happy to. Normally, I don't do events where there are metric bikes and cruisers because it's a different type of a program. But the people that you're trying to reach, the veterans, that's why we're behind you 100%. Philip and I talked about this in advance. We're going to give you all the publicity we can. I'm going to have a booth there. Philip's going to be there talking, trying to get the radio set up or something. I don't know what we're going to do yet. We're working everything out here. We think that you're good people. I met all of you. We think your idea is right. And I love the fact that you're reaching out to sell. You're telling the new guys coming back, hey, we have a safety net for you. We're here to help you. Because I came back in 1971. When did you come out, Phil? When did you get out of the military?
91.
Not when he came out being gay. Okay,
no.
Okay, 91. We all came out at different times. But the point is, we had no support group. And it's like our speaker tonight's talking about, he came out, he had no support group at all. These kids getting out, the men and women. And once again, I have to stop for a second, remind
you know
everybody.
Why? You know why, don't you, Bill?
Why?
You can't handle the truth.
America can't handle the truth.
America cannot handle the fact that our women are coming back from overseas missing an arm or a leg. We can't handle the fact that our daughters are coming back shrapnel over their face. They're just every bit as good as any man soldier walking down the street. But again, we see a man in uniform missing an arm or a leg, a shrapnel. We walk up to him and we say, God bless you for your duty. We Americans, we men, my generation, we see a woman in uniform walking down the street missing an arm or a leg. It tears us up inside. It hurts too much. We don't want our women hurt. And yet our women are 100% out in the front line doing the same thing. What's he saying, Phil?
Oh, yeah.
Phil, what's that man saying?
You want answers?
I want answers.
You want answers.
I want answers.
You can't handle the truth.
Truth is
that... Well, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it?
You, Lieutenant Weinberg... Santiago, and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know, that Santiago's death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide, and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Wow. I said this before. When I first saw that movie, I was against Jack Nicholson. I thought he was a bad guy. But I got to realize and respect what he was talking about. We need men like that out there. We need men and women out there who are willing to put their lives ahead of this country. That's fantastic. And that's why I like what this young man is doing right now. He's out there 100% there trying to say, we're trying to help these young vets. I can't say these young men anymore. These young vets. This type of program should go all across America. We need to help again, I applaud what you're
doing.
You
know why, don't you, Bill? Because there's another guy. This guy's just dying to talk.
Let me hear what this guy's got to say.
I don't...
Is he a happy fellow?
No.
He's not a happy fellow?
No.
What's he not happy about?
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel belt and radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Whoa. Calm down, buddy.
I want you to... No. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Damn, I'm as mad as hell. It's people like this young man, though. He's doing something to make a difference. He's not doing this for his own ego. He's already out of the military and all that. But the fact is he's trying to help these young vets coming out by giving them alternative means. You don't have to hang out with drugs. You don't need alcohol. Get your motorcycle. Find other people. There's people like you. I believe you can only help yourself by helping other people. It's another reason why I like what this is doing. In fact, I very, very rarely give anybody my 100% conviction. This young man is doing an awful lot. Kennedy's Custom Cycles will be there with some of our Harleys. I'm going to try to get food. We're going to try to do something. I don't know what we're going to do yet. We're bringing all of our friends down. I know a lot of you people are different countries, different states and all that, but you need to find more people like this young man. We need to find more people like this young man that's saying, I want to do something. Because it's so damn easy to say, oh, I don't know, I'll just, I don't know what to do. Here's a good example of what a guy's doing. So
well,
anyway.
We got our one guy in China.
China's out there again.
Yeah, we got our one guy in China.
Oh, God. If they ever get that guy in China, he'll be in prison. Our broadcast is illegal in China. But every now and then, one man listens to us from different locations. That takes a lot of moxie, doesn't it?
That was June 19th, right? Or June 29th?
I don't remember. 29th? I think it said 29th.
Was that June 19th or June 29th?
Doom Squad, we lose you?
No, I'm still here, sir.
What was the date again, please?
Oh, it's June 29th. 2013, this year. We've got about 45 days since the event kicks off.
Okay.
When are you and I in Mexico? July?
July.
Okay, never mind. June's fine.
Does your MC have, like, a webpage on Facebook?
We do have a Facebook. No, actually, yeah. There is an event created on the Facebook already. If you want to look up Doom Squad MC, it is on that page. Or you can actually look me up directly too, and I can get you wherever you need to be. And if you literally just type in Southbound, which is my road name, and search in, let's see, I'm at Fallbrook now. If you just put in San Diego, I'll pop up. You'll see a picture of me. I'm wearing a bandana and I got a goatee and a pair of glasses on.
Okay. I'll look real quick before you're not on the show.
Yeah, right on. No, I mean, and we are looking for vendors right now. And I mean, our vendor spaces and what we're doing is we're charging $150, okay? You know, everyone's like, oh, they want money for this. They want money for that. Okay, check it out. Well, no matter what, if you have a vendor space and you come out and sell stuff, whatever you make at the event is your money. So if you sell dolls and you come out and sell $300 worth of dolls, guess what? You just made $150 for the day. That's how we're rolling with it. The money that you pay for that stall space goes to Wounded Warriors. Flat cut fee. Have a nice day. We're also going to be doing some calendars right now. Let me tell you about this calendar thing. It's been very, very, very aggravating trying to get models to show up to shoots. Oh, Lord. Anyways, but we're going to be doing a pre-sale of calendar, and all the proceeds from the calendar is going to Wounded Warriors as well. We've got Playboy models coming out for this. We've got local models. One girl, her name is Tiffany, and she's actually pretty big locally here in San Diego, and she's got all kinds of tattoos. She's pretty good looking for me, you know, and, you know, we got other girls coming out that are doing this, you know what I mean? Well, I know her personally, and I know her boyfriend, so I didn't, you know, didn't want it right. to sound like, oh, wow, I'm just drooling hot over her. No, I mean, she's a pretty woman, you know, but...
Well, actually, Bill and I have a picture of her together.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
She's got a red tattoo thing on her chest.
Everybody?
She's blonde.
No, this was before she had the tattoos.
Oh, okay.
You know, we've got a good friend of ours in Colorado that's doing photography. I wonder if we can get him to try to give this guy some information on that, too. This guy does nothing but photograph models. It's a hell of a tough job he has. Maybe
well,
we can
the main girl that's the one, the main girl who's running the shoots and finding the girls and stuff, she actually is a Playboy model.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And she's a good friend of mine. She's really, really super cool. She's a hardworking girl. She works four jobs. She does.
We have a lot of women out there. Are you going to have any men in the calendars?
No men, sorry. Not this year. But, I mean, we could take that under advisement for next year because, like, literally I think we have one or two girls left to shoot and then we're done because we have to get this wrapped up by next Wednesday to have enough time to get all the calendar together and, you know, because we're selling ad spaces on the calendar too. But I think that has to be in either by tomorrow or by next Wednesday of next week.
Well, I should have said something a little earlier, Bill. We could have got him some models.
I talked to him. He didn't mention me about the models. I would have, you know, helped with that there, but okay. Anyway,
her name is Ashley. She wanted. She was like, "No, I'm going to run the models," because I was all like, when we were having, you know, our business meeting, there was like six of us sitting there about this, you know, who was all putting this together. And running everything, I was all like, well, why don't we just put an ad on Craigslist, you know what I mean? Because we were talking about, because you have to pay models to shoot, you know what I mean? You have to pay a photographer, pay this, pay that, pay this, pay that, right? And I was like, well, what if we did this to keep the cost down? I was like, why don't we put an ad on Craigslist and, yes. you know, set it up so that the girls shoot for their portfolio. They do it for free. It's for a, you know, nonprofit event. And, you know, they put it in their portfolio, have a nice day, right? And then she was like, no, I've got the girls. I'm taking care of that. I was like, okay, slow your roll, calm down.
Careful of your expenses. You don't want all these expenses eating you alive with profits. Go. I like your idea of asking women to volunteer because it's going for the Warrior Foundation. I think you're 100% correct. If you ran an ad like that, women from all over would submit something for that, so... But again, we're too late now for that, so we'll just press on and happiness and all that. So 1 week
exactly.
to go.
Exactly.
Let's not go back in time and fight that. Yeah. May I
no,
ask
actually,
you? cause you to get involved in this whole program.
How
what
did
the hell
I get
made you
want
to give
this?
Your time, brother?
My time. Oh my God. Like I said earlier, you know. A lot of people hate when they're in the military, you know, especially, you know, I don't want to bag on the Marine Corps, but a lot of Marines hate when they're in. They hate, it's a love-hate relationship with the Marine Corps. I had it, and about every Marine I know has it. You are either super in love with the Marine Corps, you either hate the Marine Corps, or it's a love-hate relationship. 90% of Marines have a love-hate relationship. And since I've gotten out and I've realized how much I actually miss the job, I miss doing what I used to do, I miss the people and the camaraderie I had, I found that when I speak to vets, and I've spoken with vets from World War II, Korea, Vietnam. I spoke with a World War II vet actually at a food drive I was doing over at a church one day. I'm not religious, but, you know, that's a whole different story. I was helping with a food drive. And I ended up having a 30-minute conversation with this man who was a fighter pilot and shot down. You know, and when veterans who are combat vets have conversations like that, a lot of stuff is unsaid because it doesn't have to be. It's understood. And you feel that camaraderie and you feel that closeness with somebody else that you don't feel with a lot of people anymore. You know, so when we were thinking about doing something, and because we always do something to help out, you know, whatever we can. Like I said, we do food drives and toy drives, stuff like that, school supply drives. And someone brought up the idea about trying to work with Wounded Warriors. And I looked at it and I went, oh, hell yeah, let's do that. Because you know what? A lot of people, they don't support the war. I don't support the war, okay? I don't support what our government did because I have a personal view about that because I was there. I was told one thing and it turned out what I felt was something different. But I support my troops. I support them because you know what? Yes, they signed the contract. It was their choice. But you want to know what? Sometimes you can agree with something and still not have to do it. You know, any parents out there, they know that feeling, you know, or it's my God, it's kind of difficult to kind of explain, you know, but to feel that camaraderie and to feel that somebody, I can help somebody else, that I didn't get that help when I got out. I suffer from PTSD. I suffer from pretty bad. I've been diagnosed with it. I seek treatment for it. I take a list full of medications for it. And depending on my mood, if I'm not on my meds, I'm either off the wall crazy. That's how I got the name Southbound. Or I hate everybody and I want to kill everything. You know, I didn't have that support when I came out. And, you know, Wounded Warrior does help veterans with PTSD. They help them adjust. They help them understand that it's okay to feel this way. They help them to do things that without that direct support, because once you get out, you're on your own. You know, for the past 4 years of your life or 6 years spent on your contract, you know, there's somebody there telling you what you need to do, how to handle this. You need help, go there. You get out, you're on your own. Then you have what's called a VA, you know, the Veterans of America.
Let me tell you this. You go to the VA, you know what the first question they ask you now?
Do you feel like harming yourself?
No. And how many guns do you have? How many guns do you have?
I tell them like this, just like my tattoo, none of your fucking business.
Enough to do the job. You know, at my shop at Kennedy's, we have a lot of guys come in with post-traumatic stress. If they were bikers before they went in, they can hang around the shop for a while, and by osmosis, being around the carburetors, the exhaust pipes, the gas tanks, after a while they start to take themselves back to a time before they were in the military, a time when they had their Harley-Davidsons. We eventually get one vet talking to another vet. Now, I'm not here for great cures and all that, but we're just telling everybody, if I can get a vet talking to a vet or an enlisted man right now talking about motorcycles, that's the first step. Once I get them doing that, I get them talking to other people. I try to get vets helping vets put a clutch cable on outside if they know what they're doing. We have to find ways to work. Now, I talk to some of the vets. They tell me they're at the VA hospital learning music therapy, beating the drums. I'm not sure that worked for me. I get other vets that are telling me that they got them putting the pegs in the holes. I don't think that worked for me. For me, it's motorcycles. I relate to motorcycles. I'd like to ask you, but when you get the flyers out, to intermittently have a lot of your metric cruisers come on down to my shop. I want some of my people to start seeing that this event is going to be open to everybody. Now, I know you'd be heavy at all the metric shops and all that, but I think that the more you guys coming in for 5 to 10 minutes at the Harley shop here, I think that'll help the, not the credibility, but maybe the understanding of what the event's about, if that's okay with you.
That's not a problem. Like I said, we ride everywhere together. We are a mixed club. You know, we don't, I have, like, you know, you have a lot of clubs that are, you know, like, white, black clubs. My VP is black. My president is white. My sergeant arms is black. You know what I mean? It's the same thing with our bikes. My VP rides a Harley. My president rides a Busa. Both my road captains rode metric bikes. I ride a Harley. you know, it's a mixed family, you know what I mean? But it's all still about those two wheels. It's all about that free ride. It's all about that road. It's all about working on that bike, taking it apart and putting it together again, because it is therapeutical. So, yes, I have no problem with coming and bringing the whole club down.
I appreciate that. Ladies, do we have any questions for this young man?
Yeah, I do. I sent you a friend request.
Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. He has no idea. What state?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please?
I'm Nora. I'm out of Chicago, and I'm a regular on the show here. Yeah, Chi-Town. Now, did you have, like, family help or anything when you came back?
Not really. I had a really rough childhood. My family, like, I don't speak to my mom. I rarely speak to my father. I don't speak to my sister. I left home. My family's all from the East Coast. I actually grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. I was actually born at the Great Lakes Naval Hospital.
Okay.
So, you know, I grew up in Cleveland, and my family lives on the East Coast. I live out here. And if I could actually, if the country was bigger and I could go farther away, I probably would. You know,
I'm sorry
so
to
when
hear
I came
that.
Out,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. But you know, when I came out, I was dating a girl, and her family was there for me. I still speak to them intermittently. You know, and I've been told that when I came back, I was screwed up. You know what I mean? Like really bad. It's kind of different. When you come back and you've been that way, even with people you've known and loved for years, you cannot associate with them. They don't understand you. They don't get why you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning walking around because you can't sleep. They don't get, you know, why you haven't slept in 3 days and you still can't sleep. They don't get why the little old lady who's driving and you know she's old and shouldn't be driving because she's creating a traffic hazard, cuts you off, and all of a sudden you want to freaking go nuts on her. They don't understand that. They can't relate. You know, America, I hate to say it, the way this is going to come out, you know, but a lot of people, America's very, like, blinded. You know, if you picture, like, horse blinders on a horse, you know, America doesn't see the rest of the world. They don't understand how hard it is in the rest of the world. They don't understand how rough it is. Everyone, and especially here in California, because like I said, I'm from the East Coast, I've noticed a lot of people think it's all about them. Guess what? This world don't care about you one bit. You are nothing to it. And a lot of people don't understand that. They don't understand. It's the same thing with, like, our policies and, you know, Mothers of America and all this BS. You know, they don't understand the rest of the world. Oh, well, why did they cut the hands off of thieves? Well, guess what? You cut one hand off, you going to steal again? I'm not.
Exactly.
You know, it's crazy how everyone wants to have their own opinion about this, but they can't relate to it. You know, they want to have their own opinion about why veterans are the way they are and blah, blah, blah. You've never been over there. I hate it when they talk about guns and gun control and gun control this. How many registered legal owner of firearms committed a crime with it? Find me that. No, registered legal owners? Find me the number of people who actually do that. Most people commit crimes with guns, I'll give you at least a 5% give on that one, okay? There's probably about 5% of registered gun owners, legal gun owners who handle weapons who commit, and I know that's high.
Right.
Commit crimes, I mean. And I know that's a high estimate. It's the people
who don't. Well, it depends
on
where you live, you know?
Right.
Some
I mean,
it.
Like,
you, it depends
your
on
kind,
you
like, your state has some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
Well, no, we're able to carry. We are able to carry now.
Oh, you guys are? Open carry or concealed carry?
Concealed carry, but they're trying to pass it to where you can carry on buses, the L train, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
They are trying to pass it. And if they do, wow, that's all I have to say.
Why is that a wow? I mean, does the thought of someone carrying a gun on their hip scare you?
Oh, no.
It's an inanimate object.
You have to understand, I used to have 12 guns in my home.
Guns don't scare me at all.
Yeah, you grew up around guns. Yeah, it doesn't bother me at all. I carry a big old knife on my side here in California. You know why?
Right.
I'm not allowed to open carry a pistol. That's exactly the reason why. Because if it was legal to open carry a pistol, I would open carry a pistol. Because you know what? I'd rather be able to draw the weapon and use it for self-defense than not be then become a victim, a statistic. I don't want to be a victim, ever.
Boys and girls, we have 10 seconds left. We're going to have to wrap this up tonight.
Okay.
I'm hoping we'll have all of our guests back again, and we need to talk more about this event. Can I have you call in intermittently? Are you good to go?
Yes, sir. I will call in. Anytime you want me to call in, I will call in.
All right. Every Thursday, you want to just give us a little buzz? Let's talk about this. Let's keep the public aware of this here. For all of our guests out there tonight, I want to say thank you very much for tuning in. Truly, without you people, it would just be me and Philip, and how frickin' boring that would be. So let me say goodnight.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Now it's time to say goodbye.
My
friends.
You're not going
to
ruin this song.
See you soon. K-E-Y. Why? Because...
M-O-U-S-E.
All right. Goodbye, guys.
Good night.
Selena Gomez, go take us out tonight with Come and Get It. No, what the hell? Oh, poison, poison. Every rose has a thorn. The hell you got that up there? A little poison now. Take you home, boys and girls. Thank you again, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Night.
We both lie by the ceiling in the dead of the night. Although we both lie close together, we feel miles apart.